Simon sticks out the glove. Krejci shoots, he scores!
Now, the show that's all about hockey. This is the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub with Ryan Johnston, Johnson Rock, and Bob Beers. Presented by Shaws and Star Market. Download the Shaws app or Star Market app and save today. Also brought to you by Devlin Energy, Mass General Brigham, Sparks Hockey, Dairy Queen, UFOS Recovery Footwear, and Sports Etc.
Welcome in to another edition of the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. Great to be with you once again as we gather together for a couple hours of hockey talk in preparation for a matinee game over at TD Garden this afternoon as the Bruins will take on the Columbus Blue Jackets, as Joe just told you, 1 o'clock faceoff. Judd and Bob will, of course, have the call, and they join us in studio here as we kick things off today. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning.
Should have some fun on the show today. We've got some things to talk about coming out of a road trip out west, a couple of home games, a couple of shootout games on Tuesday and Thursday night. We'll also be joined by Doc Emmerich coming up at 9:35 this morning, legendary voice of the NHL. And have, I'm sure, a lot of fun with him. We've got Ty Anderson and Billy Jaffe to join us as well in the second hour. Okay, so where to start? Back-to-back shootouts at the Garden here in the last couple of games. One win against the Islanders in a game that Jim Montgomery admitted afterwards he thought might be a scheduled loss coming out of that road trip. And then a game against the Kings where you see a two-goal lead get away in the third period and end up losing in the shootout. Kind of overall thoughts on those couple of games?
It took them a while for the Islander game to get going, right? Probably half the game, almost half the game before they've got into a rhythm. And I gave him full marks for that one because, yeah, it was, I mean, scheduled loss is a term that's been used, you know, throughout over the last several years. You've heard that from time to time. And, you know, it's, look, the Western teams travel a ton. So it's hard for you as an Eastern team, even though you just came from out West, to say, you know, to complain about the travel. You know, we talk to the Western teams all the time. They said, don't even talk to the hand. you're going in the wrong direction if you're complaining about travel because the West has it a lot harder. And they're right. Between time zones and just the distance travel, right?
Between cities, yeah.
But I can tell you it is real. I mean, you know, trying to get back on Eastern time, the clock, the body clock's not all there. We did a funny interview with Jimmy Montgomery the other day, and he was talking about body temperatures and the time of day when your body's this temperature compared to that temperature. And he goes through all this with, and he says, the only reason I know this is because I talked to the sleep experts, you know,
right. They study this stuff. Right?
Yeah. And they've got these people on staff. So anyhow, it took them a while to get to it. I give them full marks for the win. You know, you get to a shootout, it's whatever, you know, you win, you lose. I don't get too excited either way. Sometimes it's the way that you get there, though, that you kind of look more into. And so I gave them full marks for that game against the Islanders, battling, getting to their game eventually. And that's a hard team to play against, the Islanders. They're not world beaters, but they're a heavy team. They're a hard team to play against. And you got to be ready to battle with them. And the Bruins came out on top on that one. Against the Kings, okay, so you, as much as you give them full credit for the Islander game, I thought, and I know that they tried to give the Kings credit. I thought the Kings were there for the taking. It was the last game of their road trip. It was 2-0. There was nothing going on. I don't think the Bruins had that, let's get to 3-0 sense. It was, okay, we're up 2-0. We're going to win this game, which is fine because they have a believability about them. You know, but they end up losing it in the shootout. They get into some penalty trouble. They don't do the job on the power play. The Kings get the 5-on-3. They score to tie it up. And then they win it, you know, in a shootout. Seven rounds. So, you know, again, don't get too excited about shootout win or shootout loss. But how did you get there? You had a 2-0 lead in the third period.
And this team's been so good in the third period all year.
It's hard to find criticisms because of what they've done all season. But that one, I think, you had an extra point in your pocket and you let it kind of get away.
Well, and Phoenix Copley looked so rickety in the first 40 minutes of the game. And then in the third period, the Bruins had some power play chances because the Kings took back-to-back minor penalties. And somehow, I think it was a one-timer that Copley stopped off of David Pastrnak in the far circle. And I think Jim Montgomery had mentioned that he said to Chris Kelly, if we don't score here, I think this is going to be a tie game. I think we're heading into the shootout. But going back to the Islander game, one of the things that really helped them, they got an early power play. Jake DeBrusk with a fortunate tip. He said he couldn't see the puck when we talked between
periods. I don't know how they were up 2-0. At the
time. That's what Lane Lambert was saying. I think he was calling timeout. How are we down 2-0 at this point? And his team settled down and they went back to business. But that certainly benefited the Bruins, because I think had the Islanders scored that first goal in that game, I think the Bruins, they would have had a hard time playing uphill most of the night. But instead, they got the 2-0 lead and ultimately fashioned the 2 points.
I'll add one more thing to it on the Kings game. Bruins need some work on their 4-on-3. Because it's, you know, you've got world class players out there, but you're not getting the looks that you want. They had a 4-on-3 against Vegas in overtime. Really didn't get the looks that they wanted. They had a 4-on-3 against the Kings in overtime. They went with 4 forwards, and there really wasn't much there. So I think that's something that they're going to look at hard.
Yeah, and
that's an opportunity to close the game out right there.
Right. It's not a situation that during the course of a game comes up a whole lot, but when you get to overtime, we've actually seen it a number of times this year. There's one team or the other ends up shorthanded in overtime. Yep.
Well, if I look back at the sheet against the Kings, I think even though the Bruins had the man advantage there in the overtime, I want to say they were outshot 4-1 or 5-1 in that overtime session, and that's a time where you had a chance to close them out.
So, you know, again, it almost feels like nitpicking if you find any negative things to talk about this team, because even as, you know, they struggle last week, they lose the game in Arizona, but they come back and they beat a team like Vegas on
it's
the road.
It's a strange,
you know,
game to lose. They should have really had points in every game on that road trip. It is nipping. They continue to bank points. And I think, you know, and then this week, Toronto finally loses in regulation. I think it's the first time in, 15 or 16 games that they had lost in regulation. You know, they had been on a really good roll. New Jersey started to lose a couple of games now. So I think every team kind of goes through it. You want to keep banking the points. And I think, you know, look, we're into the game 30 tonight.
Yeah.
So you're into the middle of this. You're into the meat of the season right now. And, you know, the schedule's been coming. It's been every other day. You got 2 sets of back-to-back games coming up, one before Christmas, one after Christmas, you know, next week and the week after. So it's, you know, you're into it now. And It's important to keep banking the points, stay as healthy as you can. That's easier said than done, and try to use everybody. And that's something the Bruins have been able to do this season. Now, last game, there was a couple guys that played under 10 minutes, and that's because of the penalties and, you know, power plays and the penalty killings. So I know that they want to get out in front of some of the penalties that they've taken, you know, not be in the box as many times. There's little things that they need to continue to work on, and I know that the pace of their game is maybe slowed just a little bit. That was discussed yesterday by Jim Montgomery at his presser. So, but it's hard to keep up that pace for a full season. You know, you see a team like the Rangers who lose a bunch of games in a row, all of a sudden they've won 5 in a row. You see the Pittsburgh Penguins who lost 7 or 8 in a row at one point. Now they've won 7 in a row. It's the Bruins haven't had those. They've had good swings, right? But they haven't had the down swings that some of these other teams have.
And that's, you know, it, regardless of coaches, it feels like that's kind of been a hallmark of this team over the years, is they don't get into those skids where they go 5 or 6 games
without
a win.
Get out in front of it.
They, you know, they might lose 2 in a row. On a rare occasion, they lose 3, but they
haven't this year.
No, they haven't. But it's a, you know, it's that steady pace during the course of the season that always has them in contention at the end of the year, because they don't go through a 2-week stretch without a win.
That's the hallmark of good teams. Good teams do not have long losing skids, you know, and you know, it's funny when we see counterparts from other NHL teams, when the Bruins are coming and playing and they're like, wow, you guys are amazing this year. And absolutely. Listen, best record in the National Hockey League. But I think you also have to keep in mind, this was a 50-win team a year ago. This was still one of the best teams in the National Hockey League. They've only gotten better from what we've seen last year.
All right, just getting started here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. We can get to some calls coming up here at 617-779-0985. And again, Doc Emrick is going to join us in about 20 minutes as well. The Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning.
Stay tuned for more of the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5 The
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerot, Bob Beers. The Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show continues on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub, the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerot, Bob Beers here with you on a Saturday morning. 617-779-0985, of course, the number for your calls. And we kick it off with Maria in Watertown. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, everyone. Hey, I just want to quickly touch on the good, the bad, and the ugly of the game against the Kings, but I'm going to start in reverse order. The ugly has to do with the officiating, particularly that call that was made very late in the game on Brandon Carlo, to me, simply because he got caught up with the linesman who couldn't get out of the way. And I don't care if it's your first day on the job or your thousandth day on the job. You don't make that call that late in the game and in a tie game like that. So that's the ugly. They missed a bunch of offsides, too, some of which were to the benefit of the Bruins, but just very, very poor officiating the other night. The bad was that 4-on-3 power play, Bob, to your point. I just don't understand how it can continue to look so disjointed and out of sorts, particularly with the talent that you have out on the ice. So that was a bit frustrating and disappointing. But the good for me is Brad Marchand seems to be coming back to Brad Marchand form. And if that's the case, the rest of the league is in big trouble as they're playing the Bruins. I just liked the way he was zipping around, and he was a little bit of his ratty self, but without crossing the line. So those are my thoughts on that game, gentlemen. And I just want to wish you all a very, very Merry Christmas and happy holiday season.
You too, Maria.
Same to you. You as well. Thank you.
Let's start with Marchand, because he had gone four games without a point going into that game. Gets a goal. As she said, he's kind of his ratty self. He was definitely playing with some emotion in that game. Got into it with the officials, got into it with the Kings. There was a lot going on in Marchand's game the other night.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I mean, there's obviously, I think he was in the box three times. I think his last one was 4-on-4, right? But he took a couple other penalties. And so Judd's been touting him for Lady Bing this year, but that kind of went out the window in that game. I don't think that's going to happen anymore.
An announcer can dream.
Yeah, right. No, we've talked a little bit about him. Good to see him get on the board with that goal. There's been games where he certainly has looked himself. There's been other games where he hasn't quite been there. So he came back early from this, major surgery, and I think you just need a little bit more time. I don't doubt him for a second. I give him as much time as he needs. I don't doubt him for a second. The way he plays, the way he competes, he'll be there. And he's still got a point a game, and he hasn't been, quite up to his own standards. He's talked about it.
Not even close to a concern for me. But he had mentioned he's still not there. The conditioning, normally his ability to hang on to pucks at the tail end of shifts, win battles in those spots. He said it's still not there yet, but there's no question it's going to come. It's just a matter of time.
The other part about the officiating the other day, I didn't have an issue with the Carlo penalty, even if he does get tied up with the linesman. I think you have to call that. I really do. So I had no problem with that call. I hated the Clifton penalty.
Oh.
If that's a cross check, then, there's, and so they had, Doughty's was way more of a cross check than Clifton's was, but unfortunately Bruins aren't able to convert on it. And the 4-on-3 wasn't where it needed to be. And there were a couple of, we don't talk about it much because there was no goal scored, but there were a couple offsides that were, I think.
It seemed to be pretty obvious.
Did you see the offside, by the way?
For Connor McDavid?
Oh, it's massive news in Canada right now.
Of course, it's Connor McDavid.
It led to what would have been the game-winning goal in overtime by Draisaitl, but McDavid preceded the puck over the line, which is allowed as long as you have possession and control, which he did not. That's what it was deemed, and it's been a huge controversy in especially Edmonton.
Well, he came out and he said the league has to basically clarify some of these rules.
I don't agree with him on that. Look, nothing's black and white. Goalie interference is not black and white. The offsides, it was offsides.
Is icing black and white?
Well, yeah, exactly.
thought so until a few games ago.
Yeah, but I think he was really frustrated. Because they thought they got the game winning goal. He was off the ice. He was down to the locker room. They had to pull him back.
I saw that. So from the Bruins' perspective, she brings up Marchand and what he's brought to the table. I want to talk about Pavel Zacha and what he's brought to the table. Not just this year, and we've talked in the past about him, about his ability to basically play everywhere. If you need him, you can plug him in. Up and down the lineup. We see him for a couple of games have to fill in for David Krejci. And, again, it's one of those guys that there's a value in having that where he can play on all lines. He can play multiple positions and all of that. But he's also, I think, surprised a lot of people, not just because of his versatility, but because of how good a player he actually has shown himself to be. Where at I think a lot of people, when he was brought in, just thought, this is just going to be another guy, right? This is going to be a third line, fourth line role player. He's not going to provide that much.
Who thought that?
I think a lot of people. I don't think
he was a sixth overall pick when he came out.
Yeah, but he was a disappointing sixth overall pick for much of his career, though. I mean, there's a reason he's here.
Playing in an organization, though, that was struggling and until now has found it after taking a couple of guys first overall, Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier, and starting to add on. So I didn't hear that. I'm sure it might have been.
I don't
out
think
there.
The name Pavel Zacha meant a lot to Bruins fans. When he came in, I didn't see a lot of high fiving and celebrating going on.
No question about it, but you've got a guy with size, you've got a guy with versatility, you've got a guy with hockey sense, good hands. A lot of guys have talked about the fact that he can rip the puck maybe better than anybody on the team when he does decide to let it go. But this was a sixth overall pick when he came out. He's got some talent. What he's been able to do is manifest some of that talent. And in situations where the Bruins have needed him, in the middle, on the wing, doing a lot of the dirty work at the offensive and defensive end, he's done it.
Yeah, he's his reputation kind of coming in was he looked great in a uniform. This guy, big, strong, can skate, can shoot, can do a lot of things. And he kind of left you wanting a little bit more. I think that he is been really good for the Bruins this year. So you don't judge a guy until you see him on a nightly basis. And I think he's done a lot of good things for them. He's not going to run people over. He doesn't get knocked off of pucks too often. He's getting, he's been pretty good in that area. He's been able to set people up. His creativity with the puck's been really good. How about that pass he made in Vegas to Jake DeBrusque, which I think was the game winner. You'd love to see him on the goal scoring side a little bit more, and I'm sure he would like to have that as well. But he's played some second penalty, a second or third penalty killing pair. Sometimes he's in and out of that role, but he's second power play, and he's played in a lot of important minutes for the Bruins. So I think he's somebody that Jim Montgomery can count on in a lot of good areas. Now he's shown the ability to play center, play wing, play both wings, and play center. I mean, that stuff is not easy to do. And I don't know if it's been exactly seamless, but it's been pretty good. So I think they're very happy with what they've gotten out of him so far this year.
And I think they've got two guys like that, one right-handed in Charlie Coyle and one left-handed in Pavel Zacha.
Well, when you say, he kind of left people wanting more, right? I always thought about Charlie Coyle in Minnesota. It's like it seems like his numbers should be better at the end of the year, right? This guy seems like he should be putting up more numbers. And I look at Pavel Zacha the same way. I mean, 36 points is his career high last year in New Jersey, right?
It's a team that really struggled to score.
Of course. I mean, it's not a good team, but 36 points for, as Judd pointed out, a sixth overall pick as your career high at this point in his career is leaves you wanting more. There's no question about that.
Well, and again, I haven't taking a deep dive into what happened to him with the Devils, you know, beyond, you know, Beersy had mentioned that. I've heard a lot of that, and certainly we had a chance to see him during his National Hockey League career coming up prior to this point. You think about Charlie Coyle. Part of the issue with him in Minnesota, and why weren't the numbers better? Because anytime they had a need, they plugged Charlie Coyle in. Okay, we need a right wing on the second line. Plug Charlie Coyle in. Okay, we need Charlie Coyle to play center. Okay, plug him in. We need Charlie Coyle to check because we're having an issue on our third line. Plug Charlie Coyle in. To some extent, I don't know if the situations were the same because Minnesota was a playoff team. New Jersey was not. Mm. But if you look at Pavel Zacha, first couple years in the league, he's center. Then they start picking first overall, and they take centers. He gets moved to the wing. Then he starts getting bumped further down into the lineup. So maybe the production wasn't there. But that was a team, other than the one season where Taylor Hall was the MVP of the league, they struggled. They had a lot of different issues. But for Zacha, I think he doesn't have to play as many roles here with the Bruins. The expectations are different. And he's provided them. He's also surrounded by a much different core here than he was in Jersey.
Well, that does make a difference for a lot of guys who wind up here, right?
Absolutely, it does.
When you have as deep a lineup as they do, and you're playing with the people the caliber of Bergeron, Krejci, Pastrnak, Marchand, right? I mean, you're going to benefit from that.
Well, let's take it to another player, in a guy like Taylor Hall. So Hall scored in the last game. He's got six goals in the last eight games. But he has talked about the fact how important it has been for him and his development to play with those guys and the fact that he doesn't have to be the guy to score, the guy to lead the team, that he can learn from guys like Bergeron and Marchand and at the same time still ply his game. And he's looking great right now where he is.
All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, longtime voice of the NHL around the United States, Doc Emmerich will join us on the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show on the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
From the front office to center ice. This is the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub back here on the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you, and we are happy to head out to the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline and welcome in one of the voices of hockey across this country and one of the most beloved broadcasters in probably any sport history. Doc Emmerich is joining us now on the show. Good morning, Doc.
Ryan, hi. I am a Volkswagen expert. I just rolled out from underneath my 64 Beetle and I'm doing an oil change here this morning, so I hope it's all right. If you hear any rattling, it's because I haven't done it very well.
Doc, we wanted to talk a little bit about the Winter Classic because we're not far away from the Bruins and the Penguins facing off at Fenway Park. You obviously had a chance to call the game back in 2010. It was the Flyers against the Bruins. And as a baseball fan and a long-suffering Pirates fan, sorry, had to go there, what did you enjoy about,
you did.
About stepping into Fenway and doing the game back in 2010?
It was a thrill. If you don't mind 30 seconds of an anecdote about Bruins and Flyers and history, it was 51 years ago that the Bruins played their last game on Christmas Day. And it was against the Flyers. And I remember talking with one of the Flyers about playing a game on Christmas. He was Joe Watson. He was in the game that day at Old Boston Garden. Bobby Clark scored first, and then the Bruins got five straight. Tom Johnson must have said something at the end of the first period because then the Bruins got five in a row, And I think you might be amused at who the goal scorers were after Clark scored for Philadelphia in the first. Orr, Hodge, Esposito, Cashman, and Sanderson. So those were the great names of the past that played on Christmas Day, the last time the Bruins and the Flyers had a game on Christmas Day. But Joe Watson said it was sad because we all had little kids at home. And of course, the league then adopted the next year. They no longer played on Christmas Eve, and that was the last year that they played on Christmas Day.
Doc, anyway, were there any fights that day? I mean, so they were all being nice to one another on Christmas?
It's a wonderful question, Beersy, and it gives me a great grasp of the era in which we all came up in and you played in. No, it was all minor penalties, and there were no penalties in the first period, which showed you that the Bruins and Flyers were in the Christmas spirit, I guess, and then it got a little snarly, but there were not even any coincidental minors in the game. But there was quite a bit of scoring. So anyhow, it was wonderful to be in Fenway Park. I've got to ask you guys before I tell you about my memories of that, where you are going to be working on the Winter Classic doing the broadcast.
We're going to be ringside, Doc.
Okay, right up against the glass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the same thing we did in Lake Tahoe as well. So for the first game at Fenway, we were actually up in the radio booth where the Red Sox do their games. So this one will be down on the glass.
Okay, and why are you not going back up in the radio booth? He asked.
That's a question.
Does it have something to do with the 4-inch numbers on the sleeve?
Oh, I don't know. You'd have to ask our intrepid producer, Howie Sylvester, why they've chosen to put us there.
Is Howie able to respond?
Not right now, but I'm sure he's texting away. His thumbs are working as we speak.
Well, we always are, you know, this may not interest the fans at all, but we are always fanatics about being able to describe who has the puck. And whether it's on TV or radio, it's kind of an obligation that we have. And as time passed on outdoor games, and I think at one time I figured up that I had done like 18 or 19 of the first 25 in the U.S. outdoor games, and they became rather frustrating. And so at a point you shifted to the generic call, and here's why. The game at Fenway, we were stationed in short center field, and the rink ran from first base to third. And the previous game that I had done was at Ralph Wilson Stadium. I missed the one at Wrigley Field because of laryngitis. Dave Strader came in and did that with Eddie Olczyk that day. But the one at Fenway, we were stationed in short center field. But unlike in Buffalo, we were not across from the benches. We were behind them. And it did not seem alarming at all the day before when they were practicing, because when I went to the location, it was about, I would say 10 feet high. And we were on a scaffold about 10 feet high and roughly, I would say, 30 feet back from the boards. On game day, the one thing that I noticed right away was that the players and the coaches took up some space blocking our view of the first third of the ice. So if you can imagine this, when play was on one third of the ice nearest us, we couldn't see. So what that meant was, very much like you might do when you are working up against the glass, you need that monitor to shift your vision to, just as we did in Ann Arbor when we first experimented with being up against the glass, and we practiced it the day before. So you just learn that there is nothing perfect about these broadcasts that occur outdoors, but the experience gives you nothing but great memories of those games. And so that's why any problems that we have might not be of any interest to the fans, because the experience trumps all of that. And I remember the roar of the crowd when the players came out. I remember the lack of noise and then the noise of the stealth when it flew over during James Taylor's rendition of the Star Spangled Banner. A lot of that is the ceremony that you remember. I remember also when the Flyers' Danny Sevret scored, and being a longtime person that would lived in Maine for 3 years, coming down to watch the Red Sox and Carlton Fisk and Jim Rice and all of those players when I was working with the evil Flyers farm team in Portland, Maine, a wonderful group of thugs who won championships. And coming down to watch the Red Sox in the summertime, that whenever one of the teams scored, a yellow number went up on the scoreboard. And when Danny Sevret scored his first NHL goal ever for the Flyers, it was not a yellow one that went up. It was a white one. And it was explained to me that if the Bruins were to score, there is only one yellow number one inside the scoreboard. And so you couldn't have two yellow ones inside the same period. This is ultimate trivia. I think the day before, it was pretty apparent from what Danny Carcillo was saying that there was going to be a fight, because he had researched the two prior Winter Classic games and determined that there were no Bob Beers coincidental majors, and so he was bound and determined there were going to be a set, and he and Sean Thornton found one another. And so we had the first set of coincidental majors for fighting in the Winter Classic at Fenway Park. We were looking for some snow. It was a slim chance, and I don't recall there even being an occasional flurry at all, that any of that happened. But it was just a wonderful experience to be there and to see it laid out that way. I remember we had in the wonderful weather of summer, we had a press conference to announce the Winter Classic, and possessive as they are, the Fenway Park ground crew yelled at Paul Holmgren of the hierarchy of the Flyers because he walked too close to the pitcher's mound. He wanted to see what it was like, and he was scolded for that. Those are some of the things that you recall from the press conference, or from the day before, or from the day of. And of course, leave it to Patrice Bergeron to set up the overtime winner with one of those patented plays of his that was eventually collared by Mark Sturm. So the cameras, so that they could get the good shots of players' faces, were on the opposite side of the ice. So returning to my complaint about where we were located, we had to shift our gaze to the monitor whenever the puck came to that one-third side of the ice that was nearest us. And we didn't notice it the day before. Why? Because during practices, no one was standing at the bench. The players were all on the ice, and the coaches were, you know, down near the boards watching them or on the ice with them. So there was really no blocking of our view then, and I should have sorted it out. But at that point, there was no way that we could have changed, because putting our scaffolds over on the other side would have blocked a lot of the paying customers who were down close to the field, as it were. We weren't really blocking that many people who were sitting high, certainly in the monster seats or in center field. So those are some of the things that I remember. I'm not sure what all you guys remember from either being there in person or from watching it on television or listening to it on the radio, but that's what some of the things I remember. It was just a grand, grand exhibition, and it was thrilling to us that it went down the home stretch the way it did, and it was a close game all along, and it was overcast that day, so there were no sun delays. And of course, after Sweet Caroline, the Bruins rallied and tied the game and won it in overtime.
Well, Doc, you referenced it a little bit earlier. You talking about, you know, difficulty sometimes of where you're sitting. So Judd and I sat at rink level, or ice level, I should say, for the Lake Tahoe game, which is a great experience, but it was very funny because the very first goal that was scored was a beautiful pass from Marchand over to Pastrnak, and we were looking directly into the sunset. We couldn't see it. And we were very close, so we were looking in the sunset. And then we had another experience the other day, and I'm not going to complain at all because we're doing NHL games in great spots, but Arizona is still a work in progress. The college arena there, that the Arizona State, there was a goal scored very first shift of the game by Arizona, and I said, okay, I got to look at the monitor and see what happened here, catch the replay. We had no monitor for the game. We were in a great location, but we had no monitor. I'm curious, when you worked in some of the minor league cities that you worked in, and with the Maine Mariners and others, and just maybe some of your experiences and what you had to deal with trying to call games then.
Well, I am so old that there were no monitors anywhere in any of the arenas. There weren't. And so at times, if there was a question, you broke for commercial at the next commercial, and you simply told your audience the truth that you could not tell who deflected it. And so you would take your headsets off during a commercial break, which at that time was 30 seconds, and go down and ask the official score or the other broadcaster what he saw. If you were in a press box that roomy, or if you were doing a game at Hershey Park Arena, you would ask the guy that was sitting next to you, who always kept notes on the game for himself. He was a fanatic fan, and we all of us visiting announcers in the league trusted him. But no, there were no overhead scoreboards. I wasn't so old that the scoreboard clocks had hands. They were all digital, but it was almost like that. No, those were archaic times. But you relied on your wits an awful lot. And the games, as you can attest, Bob, because you didn't play in them then, but you remember growing up and probably hearing about them, games would sometimes last 3 hours or 3 hours and a half back then, because the Bruins were winning championships in the 70s, and so were the Flyers on toughness. And had the Canadians not come along and rescued the sport, at least in the minds of some, they would have probably extended into the 80s that way a little bit too. But if you wanted to make the team at the big level, you either had to have great offensive skill, ability as a defenseman offensively, or with stick handling and all, or you had to be a tough guy. So that was how guys made it then. And so the games at the development league level would go long.
Doc Emmerich is joining us here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Just, there's been some criticism over the years of the outdoor games that there's too many of them, right? That they expanded from the Winter Classic. They added more in the Stadium Series. As someone who's probably been part of more of these games than almost anybody else, did it ever get old for you? Or was the experience just that good in being there in person?
Yeah, it never got tiresome for me. And it didn't get tiresome for the fans that filled the arenas or outdoor stadiums where they were held. Maybe the people that were watching on television or listening on radio said, oh, here's another one. Now, where is this one? Maybe they didn't get used to them. But I think every one was a new experience for me. And, you know, preparing for these games was fun for me because it was getting information about the various stadiums. And it's probably not appropriate to say, but I was very pleased. For example, we had Pittsburgh and Philadelphia where the Eagles play. And that was one of the rare times that an outdoor game was played. And it rained the whole game, so it did probably affect the ability of the players. And there was a certain danger factor after it started raining in the third period pretty hard. They just wanted to get the game in at that point. But both teams wore colors. And my own feeling was that was one of the mistakes made, because you really need one team in white and the other team in a contrasting color. It looked like Albion Lumber against Acme Plumbing and Egan. You know, it didn't look good. And it's not the player's fault. You know, that was just one of those things. But I'm not naive, but I realized that there are in these various football stadiums places where unruly fans are taken and contained.
Especially in Philadelphia.
Does that surprise you? I was shown one of those places, and I actually had my picture taken, hanging my head in shame as I sat in one of those holding areas the day before, just as a joke. It was nice of them to do for me, but also something that they didn't need to do. But I was curious about it, and so they were kind enough to show me.
Doc, today at TD Garden before the game, the Bruins are going to honor Patrice Bergeron for hitting 1,000 points, which happened a couple of weeks ago when the team was in Tampa. He's only the 94th player in league history to hit that plateau, fourth Bruin ever to do it. What amazed you about watching Bergeron for years and about the accomplishment?
Well, they are not my words. They are words of someone who has a better way with words than I do. And Kevin Paul DuPont wrote this probably 5-6 seasons ago. And whenever I use these, and I use them on a couple of telecasts at moments in Patrice's career, and credit Kevin for them, he once compared Patrice to Arthur Fiedler, in that his performances were always consistent in meter and in a lot of areas. And the words I can't, you know, because I've just now started to think about this. But it was a column that Kevin wrote about Patrice, and it makes a lot of sense. I remember asking him once. It may have been during the 19 final in one of those off days when there was a practice and you know, you have a little more time. You're not as rushed. The player's not as rushed. And I said, look, I look back and I saw that you played for the Bruins 1 year. And then we had that whole scale lockout in 2004-05. And you spent the entire year in Providence. You didn't really have to go to the minors and spend a whole year. Why? And he said, well, it was a way to get a lot of games in. And it was also, you know, I probably could have played somewhere else and played fewer games. It was a way to get a lot of games in. It was a way to get to know teammates better that were in the system. And he said, my English wasn't so good at that time. And it gave me a chance to be in the United States and in English-speaking North America and to do better with my English. You listen to the guy now, he's better than most of us are at speaking English. And so that was another way to use his time. I'm like you guys. I just like being around the guy because of the person he is. And I get one of those Bruins calendars every year, and there he is holding his great dog, Wilson. And if he's a dog guy, he's great by me, but he's such a wonderful performer. And I think if any Bruins fans ever knew the guy too personally, they'd admire him even more than they do for what he does on the ice. That's all I got.
Doc, we appreciate the time so much this morning. It's always a thrill to talk to you, and we hope you're doing well and hope the dogs are doing well, and love to talk to you again in the future.
Good luck with the oil change.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, well, I'm back on the dolly here, and it's a little. I'm one of the few guys that can roll underneath a Beetle and not scrape myself. You guys have a great day this afternoon with Columbus.
Thanks, Doc.
You're the
best. Appreciate
it. So much. Thanks, Doc.
All right, the legendary Doc Emmerich joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Oh, I'm one of those guys. I could sit and listen to him all day and have on many occasions.
We didn't even scratch the surface. And is there an accomplishment he hasn't had in broadcasting? I don't think so.
We didn't even get to ask him about his NFL, his short-lived NFL career.
Brett Favre's debut.
Yeah. Oh, he's got a great story. Since the Bruins are playing Columbus today, he's got a great story about Mike Milbury doing the game with Doc next to the cannon in Columbus.
All right, we will continue another hour still to come on the Shaw's and Starmarket Hockey Show. Ty Anderson and Billy Jaffe will join us in that that next hour. Hope you will too.
This is the Shaw's at Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.